Do you really think you can shoot all those men down before they shoot you? Oh, no, no, Mr. Josie Wales. There is such a thing in this country called justice.
Well, Mr. Carpetbagger, we got something in this territory called the Missouri Boat Ride.
Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, I don't even know. I have developed a condition that I've been referring to as miracle fatigue, where, you know, a miracle happens and you just are ecstatic. And then a little time passes and another miracle happens and you're incredulous. But after like the fourth or fifth miracle, and by miracle, I don't mean you don't earn it. I just mean that all the chips fall into place so that the miracle can benefit you, right? Luck meets preparation, I guess we can say. After a while, it just you just become kind of punch drunk. I just feel sort of punch drunk with all that's happened. How do you feel about it?
Sure. I mean, it is like we're on this giant roller coaster ride this year, and it's been mostly just the fun parts of the roller coaster ride and not the bad parts. And especially the last couple weeks, just been, you know, the Georgia game and the Alabama game and this game, just exciting and crazy and fun. And it's been an amazing season and really fun to be a fan.
Well, let's just think about what's happened over the course of the last month or so. I mean, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, we were worried to some degree about going on the road to play Arkansas.
We were. We were talking about splitting those two games. Arkansas and Tennessee would be lucky to get one.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we were concerned the way Tennessee had played South Carolina and everything. We were worried a little bit about going up there. And then with the Georgia game, you know, the whole Auburn family was kind of chewing its fingernails. I was confident, but just because we'd looked so good those two previous weeks. But we still didn't know anything for sure. And, of course, we should have beaten them by 3 touchdowns, or 4. But we know how that played out. We had the miracle play and then the defense at the end. And then the Alabama game, which set not just the Auburn family and not just the SEC community. Half the world seemed to, you know, light up over that, and justifiably so. You know, and after that, I couldn't doubt them anywhere. And so then we have that incredible game in Atlanta that we're going to talk about some tonight. And I said it last week. I just can't put anything past them now. this has been a season that it's very difficult for me to assess. I like to, you know, I'm a historian in part, and I like to think about things in their historical context and their meaning and their larger meaning and their impact and everything. And it's just, for me, it is just very hard to get a handle on this season. I mean, other seasons that have been big in our past have had a character. They've had a personality to them. I mean, Pat Dye used to say that he'd figure out the personality of a team, you know, early in the season and kind of figure out, you know, how they were going to play out. And so, you know, the 88 team was defense and Stacy Danley and Reggie Slack and those receivers. And the 2004 team was Jason Campbell bombing at those receivers and Cadillac and Ronnie and that really good defense. And the 2010 team was Cam and Nick and then all the supporting players. And we know what this team is, but it just has been evolving so much. I mean,
I think that's the biggest thing is other teams, you knew by like the third or fourth game, this is what this year's team is capable of, and you could kind of project it forward. And this team, the 2013 team, every week along the way played better, and you had to revise your expectations upward.
Yes, yes.
Even in the lost LSU, they played so hard, and they came back in that game and gave LSU everything they wanted, and they didn't quit. You could see it. That team could play with the top teams in the SEC. And then you saw, you know, the other games after that. We saw the Ole Miss game, the first game where they really broke out the read option and Nick Marshall keeping the ball, and you said, this offense is much better than I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And then they went on the road and beat a couple of, you know, SEC teams on the road. And the Tennessee game, the special teams were so dominant. And you revised your expectations upward again, mm-hmm. you know. And then we came home and played Georgia. And the defense, you know, really played strong in the first half. And they got burned some in the second half. But we ran all over Georgia. Georgia had a lot of injuries, but they were still one of the better SEC defenses going into that game, and we rolled up and down the field on them.
Yeah.
And again, you had to revise your expectations upward and say, look, we beat Georgia. We ran all over their defense. Alabama's good, but they're not that much better than Georgia. And then we did the same thing to Alabama. We ran all over them. We beat them. We had a great play at the end, but it doesn't disguise the fact that we – you know, move the ball on them. The defense made enough plays when they had to, and they were tough enough against the run, and we made plays to win the game, and the special teams especially at the end. And you said to say, Alabama's been the best team in the country all year. If we could beat them, if we can run the ball on them, there isn't anybody we can't beat. And certainly Missouri's an excellent team on both sides of the ball, but we can beat them. And then we beat Missouri, but not just the fact that we beat them, the way that the offense played in that game. You have to revise your expectations upward again.
Again, yeah.
So it's like this, each time you draw like a line with a projection, you know, going forward, and every time the line has to get steeper pointing upward,
mm-hmm.
you know, as you move forward each game, the projection has to get steeper and steeper because you think this team is, you know, like you said, a month into the season, if we'd have played Florida State, they would have crushed this team.
Yes.
If we'd have played Florida State the week we played Mississippi State, they'd have beat us by 20 points. But today, if we played Florida State, I think we could beat them. I mean,
I've got a lot to say about that.
We'll get to that. But I just think like that's, and it's not that Florida State hasn't gotten any worse. They've gotten better,
right.
But not significantly better. But this Auburn team has gotten light years better. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah, and this season just has a 180 degree feel from the 2010 team. I don't always, it's like I said, after the South Carolina game, which is like game, what, three or four? I guess mm-hmm. it was game four
yep.
of 2010. We pretty much knew what the 2010 team was. I mean,
yep.
they improved in spots. You know, Cam got more comfortable and could throw the ball better and all that. But pretty much what you had against Oregon was what we had to some degree, South Carolina or right after. And we had a sense of that team. And they just felt like a juggernaut. This one, like you say, I mean, this has been like a snowball that started out as a pebble and has just gotten bigger as it rolled down the hill. And you just don't know how much bigger that snowball is going to get.
That's right.
And that snowball has already flattened Tuscaloosa. And it's flat in Missouri, and it's bowling its way toward Pasadena now, which I don't think anybody dreamed. And see, that's another part of it. There's a couple of things. The 2010 team had this air of inevitability about it at some point. It had this air of, if everything goes well, this team could go do it. I think part of it is that we've lost this year because we're used to Auburn going undefeated and still not making it.
Yep.
So for Auburn to have a loss, we just said, well,
not our year.
Nope, not our year. So, I mean, think in 2010, I said something in our book and maybe we didn't have a show then. I said something in our columns in our book maybe about how to some degree that 2010 national championship was also for 2004.
That's right.
And for 1993. But that team went undefeated 2010. And to me, this one is the team that is really taking up the mantle of Auburn teams that got done wrong in the past, because this one is getting there despite having a loss. You know, the 2010 team wasn't going to stop for anybody. This team could have been stopped. I'm not sure if I'm explaining this correctly. I'll think about it and revisit it later. But
I think what you're saying is this. Those other Auburn teams had great seasons, but the breaks didn't go their way. Mm-hmm. And they didn't get the opportunity to play for a championship. This team, you know, had a loss, so maybe didn't have as good a season as some of those teams. But the breaks went their way, and then they're going to get the opportunity.
Yeah, and they've risen to the opportunity, too.
That's right. They didn't just – I mean, like you
said – They're not back into this, no.
No, they seized the opportunity. It was there before the Georgia game. Mm-hmm. That weekend of the Georgia game when Baylor lost, mm-hmm. it was there, and they went into it. They seized it.
You know, halfway through the season, I was still rooting for a bunch of undefeated teams, and I think back now how hard it would have been if that had happened, because we would have been like sixth right now. Or fifth, you know, with a loss, even beating Alabama, we still would have a loss and there'd be undefeated teams ahead of us.
I know this, and I said it on Saturday and I'll say it again today. I would have been okay with that. I would have been okay with this Auburn team going to the Sugar Bowl. I'm delighted we're in the national championship game, but this team has been so great and so wildly exceeded at my expectations, I could not be disappointed in anything with them.
You know, that you just helped me figure it out a little bit. Because you said you're delighted that we're in the national championship game. And for a quarter of a second, my brain went, what is John talking about in the national championship game? he's drunk. There's no way we're in the – oh, wait, we are. We are in the national championship game. Whoa. So
it is still hard to wrap our heads around.
Oh, my goodness. I know. Yeah. Yeah, I said something about miracle fatigue on Twitter and immediately – I think it was A. Utitude, one of our regular buddies on there, said something like, you too, you know, like it wasn't just me. That made me feel good to know that it wasn't just me that was feeling this sort of numbness, you know. And one other thing, too, about the 2010 team. Tell me if you feel this, too. With the 2010 team, Auburn and being an Auburn person, it felt like being a man who had been wandering in the desert, dying of thirst forever. And we finally see this oasis. And it was like we put all these years of frustration on their shoulders and on the 2010 team's shoulders, and they just carried us across the finish line to the oasis. This year, the history is completely different. We just won a national championship two, three years ago. So there's not that giant burden of history this time. This team doesn't have to carry 53 years of futility and frustration and getting screwed over. This team is completely free to write its own karma and its own history. And that's pretty amazing. That's territory that Auburn people haven't been in for decades.
It's true. That's a good point. This team is just free to write its own path and not worry about the burdens of history. That team could handle it.
Yeah.
So –
yeah,
but it made for a different season. It was a little bit more. It was fun, and there was some amazing games, and it was joy and stuff. But there wasn't the kind of unfettered joy I think that you have with this team because of where they came from last year, mm-hmm. and because of the way these games ended. I think those two things together,
yeah,
the expectations coming off last season for this team, and then the way these games have ended at the end of the season just create a something about this team that we'll never, ever forget.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's two recent things in history that have shaped our emotional reactions right now. One is last year, which has been talked about ad nauseum, which is this is a redemption season. But the other that I think nobody's really talked about until you and I tonight that I've heard is 2010, because this team doesn't have that karmic burden to carry. Mm-hmm. So it's got both the high and the low right behind it. Right behind it. And it doesn't have to deal with either one of those. It's like this team just jumped in a hot rod and stomped the gas and said, let's see what happens.
But the other part is, I think because of 2010 maybe broke the door down a little bit,
mm-hmm.
that people around the country were willing to say, to look at this team and go, you know what? Maybe they're one of the two best teams in the country.
Yes.
Whereas I think if 2010 had never happened, I think it would have been a more serious debate between Auburn and all the other one-loss teams.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I think people around the country, the voters, the AP people, all those people that make up, you know, ESPN, they looked at this team and they said, Gus Malzahn, he was there in 2010, same offense. Clearly this is a coach and a team and a program and some of the same players that have been there before and succeeded. So we have to take them more seriously than if it was, no offense, Mississippi State.
Yes. But I'm just saying also that Auburn is a program that's won a national title in the last few years. And it's a
right.
You know, program that people would consider a national title contending team with right. The, you know, when the team was playing that well. So
yeah. No, I think that's very good. Let me point out here that tonight's program is being brought to you by Animal Crackers. Animal Crackers, the wholesome snack. I have a bowl of Animal Crackers with a few, whatever, we can't figure out what they're called, the chocolate-covered graham cracker things mixed in together. I got a nice big glass of milk, so I'm going kind of the old-school dessert snack while we're recording tonight. I do have my finger on the mute button, so hopefully you won't get too much smacking and crunching, but I had to have my animal crackers that my five-year-old had left over.
Oh my gosh.
One other note before we get into the depths of things. I had planned tonight to make my big pitch to try to get me to Pasadena. We've been talking about that. It's on Twitter and everything, of, you know, the Get Van to Pasadena campaign. But I've had to call it off for a variety of reasons, including that I really just wanted to take my wife. It wasn't going to be as much fun without her. She's the photographer anyway. She'd have, you know, been taking all the pictures you'd been seeing wherever. But since I did some calculations, and I just don't think there's any way that we'll be able, it's just going to be an expensive, expensive trip. We were very fortunate with Arizona, you know, 3 years ago that she had relatives we could stay with and let us borrow a car and everything. So all we had to do was just get there and get tickets, which we already had, which were cheaper. So we're not going to do that anymore, and I'm not going. But we will still talk a lot about it and have columns coming up about it. And I mentioned on Twitter today, and for those that didn't see, we are going to need a cover photo for our next book, because we are going to do, right, John, you want to make that announcement? We are doing a 2013 season book.
Well, and a lot of several people have emailed us or talked about it on Twitter or whatever. And we didn't go into this season planning to write another book.
No, but no.
We have to.
I
mean, we have a lot to say about this team, and it needs to be said. So we're going to do it.
Yeah, the plan, if we were going to do another book, was something more historical, kind of like Decades of Dominance, which was going to be in a couple of years maybe or something, give us a little break. But it looks like this is going to be another January through May or something that we're that we're typing about football again, just like last January through May, but and before that. But okay, so no trip to Pasadena, but we are going to need a cover picture. So it has to be something original that you took. If you look at the cover of Season of Our Dreams, that worked out pretty good. My wife took that from our seats inside the dome. And, you know, other things I'll consider too, but game action's always good, particularly when you can kind of see the logo of the, you know, BCS or whatever. That was that was a happy coincidence there. So if, you know, if whoever that contributes the picture, we will certainly give you a credit in the book and some free copies of the book. We don't really have any money to throw around, but we'll do the, we'll give you free copies and put your name in the book and everything as the photographer. So, and you know, if you have some other pictures too, we'll put in there in black and white. So I just wanted to get that out. You want to talk about the SEC championship game? Or is there
something? Let's do it.
Or do we need to, do we have questions?
We have listener questions. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Our first question tonight comes from Josh, which is at the Blipster. And he says, will the future in starting next year college football playoff system somehow cheapen the previous BCS national champions? And he says, will the state of Alabama miss the BCS?
Oh, man. What do you think about that? I got to ponder that one for a second. I
don't think it'll cheapen the national champions. I mean, I think the four-team playoffs is going to be really fun and incredibly exciting for those of us who love college football. But I don't think it's going to cheapen them. I mean, the national champion – like, I don't think the BCS national champions cheapen the teams that were national champion before that. So right. I don't think it matters. I mean, I think it's been good for the Auburn and Alabama, but I think the playoff would be good too because they've – bring it on. We'll play them on the field. That's fine. So,
well,
I do think it. The one thing it does, which, you know, I mean, I'm all for a playoff. In a bigger playoff, the better. But it would really change the dynamic of the end of the season. For example, if we knew before we like, but in this case, like if we lost to Missouri, we wouldn't be in the playoff probably.
Yeah.
So it really, like every game was, we had to win it anyway. I mean, for us, it wasn't, we weren't going to be in. Now, maybe something like Alabama could say, even if they lost to us, they might make it into the playoff, but there's not a guarantee of that.
Right. Well, that was what Mike Slive was all about, right? Mike Slive was making sure that it was the committee would select the four quote unquote best teams and not four conference winners. That was his whole, you know, thing. Was preparing for just such a year as this. In other words, right. if this had been the first year of a four-team playoff, Mike Slive would have been a genius in terms of the SEC because we would have gotten two teams in.
You say that, but it's not a guarantee. I mean, again, the committee is not restricted to the BCS rankings. They can use whatever the heck they want to.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And whatever criteria they come up with.
Yeah, that's true.
They're not, their hands aren't tied. And they could have decided, for example, to take – you know, Florida State, Auburn, Michigan State, and then turn around and take, you know, Baylor or – it'd be tough to take a two-loss Stanford team over Alabama, but they could have taken Baylor.
Oklahoma State? No, they lost. That's right. They lost
twice. No, I think the only other team – I mean, Stanford is a – you know, play in that conference and won a lot of great games. I mean, they have an impressive resume, but the two losses make it tough to take them over Alabama. So I think – but Baylor would have been – a discussion point.
Yeah, I get your point, though, yeah.
So that's they could have. But you're right. I mean, it probably would have been that. And the, you know, frustrating thing for us is we probably would have been playing Alabama in the semifinal. So.
Yeah. God, I don't want Iron Bowl 2 ever, ever, ever.
No, I could live without that. If we have to play them in the title game at some point down the road to win the thing, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I do not want to play Alabama in a semifinal ever.
I look at playing Alabama as killing a vampire. You stick the stake in their chest and you kill the dang thing dead.
Yep.
And you don't want it rising out of its grave to terrorize poor innocent people until its next, you know, next go around.
Well, and I think, I mean, we love the playoff idea, but America does not want rematches. All right, we got lots more questions.
All right.
Next comes from Will Thrasher. He says, the national title game has to be absurdly high scoring, right? He said, that said, the long layoff can give the defense an advantage. Is it a bigger advantage for Florida State or Auburn?
Okay. First, actually, I didn't get to answer the last question. Let me just say this. Here's how I view the four-team playoff. A different way of producing a controversial result that people will complain about. There's my answer. Okay. As far as the layoff goes, I think 2010 amply demonstrated that defenses have all that time to prepare and to figure all these little things out, whereas offenses are really not – I mean, you can add some plays, but you can't really change much of what you do. And in fact, you can make the argument offenses get worse during the layoff and defenses get better.
Offenses get rusty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think having the 2010 experience really helped Auburn. They had the calendar for the, you know, what they, the practice schedule and all that. They know how to work the time. And I think they won't be overwhelmed by the magnitude of, you know, preparing for the game with all the stuff that goes with it.
Right.
But you have seen a lot of the title games recently. There hasn't been – the offenses haven't been firing on all cylinders. So I think, you know, I think the layoff's going to be pretty neutral in terms of us versus them, unless there's other distractions along the way. I don't know.
Do you think the 2010 national championship game with Oregon, such a defensive game, was that more that the defensive coordinators and the defenses had time to prepare, or was that more the offenses got rusty, or both?
It was both. I mean, our defense was better than any defense they had played. That was part of it. I mean, our defensive line just messed them up. And they were really fast on defense. That would cause problems for us. And I think Cam, you know, was a little banged up, didn't have his best game. So I think that was a lot of it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, next question from Chris Thrash. He says, do you think Nick Marshall's past experience as a defensive back gives him an advantage in the read option?
Well, it probably doesn't hurt. I mean, I you know, the only person that probably can answer that is him.
Yeah, but I mean, the interesting thing is I would say if you give him an advantage throwing the ball, if anything.
Well, you know, on the play like the Alabama play, because that mm-hmm. play was entirely predicated around the DBs doing what he wanted them to do so that he could throw it over their heads.
Yep.
So on a play like that, probably, I don't know other than that, he hadn't thrown it enough to – you know, if he was a big passing quarterback, and he might be yet, you know, but this season he hadn't had to be. So, but yeah, maybe in the future.
All right. But in terms of the read option,
I don't necessarily think so.
All right. Kenny Irwin asks, now that we're getting the deserved attention and the team so successful, what players are we in danger of losing to the NFL draft?
Well, you know this.
Yeah, I'm worried. But I mean, in the middle of the season, I wasn't so worried about this. Right now, I'm worried. Okay, Greg Robinson is one in particular I'm worried about, the left tackle. We'll talk about this. We get the Missouri game. He had an amazing game in the SEC championship game.
Yeah,
and he's had an excellent season. His stock has gone way up, and people are saying now that he's projected to be a first round draft pick. So I think there's a chance we could lose him. I would never have thought before this we would lose Trey Mason, but yeah, he's had an amazing season. He's eligible to go pro, and running backs in their career can only take so many hits.
And he's taken a lot.
He's taken a lot. So I would, you know, if he talked to the NFL and they came back and said that, you know, I don't think he'll be a first round pick, but if he's a second or third round pick and he wants to go for it, I can't blame him for that. The shelf life of a running back in the NFL is like 2.5 years.
And they don't get drafted that high anymore.
No, they don't. Unless you're insanely talented, like, you know, Adrian Peterson or something. So I wouldn't blame him if it happened, but I really hope it doesn't go because he's so fun to watch. Other than that,
And you know, we didn't talk about Trey guy, and Trey's going to be at the Heisman.
Well, I know. I was going to get to that. He's going to Heisman finalist, which is – that's the other thing maybe he just looks at as a cap on his career. If we win the national championship game and he's a Heisman finalist, I mean
– That's my point is, yeah, he's going to be able to say he's got this, and this. It's going to get to the point like Cam of there's just no point to come back, you know.
Yeah.
At least for him, which I would understand.
All right. Next question comes from Ship, who's at Jimty. He says – it's like I don't even know you anymore with all this championship talk. Thought that was funny.
Is he addressing us or Auburn or what?
I think us. Like, we particularly were kind of poo-pooing and I'm guilty of this 100%, where I said until we beat Missouri, I did not want to hear anything about Ohio State or the national championship game.
Yeah.
I mean, we needed to focus on business, and now it's
and we did
different season.
Well, and I tried. I just felt very emotionally involved in the whole "will we get left out" thing, and I understand we were coming from a completely different place this time, and so I'm just, to a certain degree, and I don't mean overall, but in some ways, okay, in some ways, I'm happier that we're not having to have the Ohio State argument than I am happy that we're going, period.
Listen, let me assure you that everybody in America is happy that we're not having that argument. I think nobody wanted to have that debate about Ohio State versus a one-loss Auburn team. Nobody did.
And, you know, the main argument they were throwing out there was, well, it's never happened before. I'm like, well, if something's never happened before, by God, we should never let it happen, you know? Forward pass. No, it's never happened before. We shouldn't do that. So that to me was a completely bogus argument. But you know what? We don't have to talk about it.
That's right. Our next question comes from Jonathan Harris, who's at AU Zoom. And he says, how many rushing yards do you think Auburn will get against Florida State? He says he thinks 350 plus.
I think it's going to surprise some people. I don't know if it's going to be Missouri-like just because the layoff. But I think that if we played Florida State in, what's today, Monday? Mm-hmm. If we played Florida State like Saturday after next, kind of like the layoff between Georgia and Alabama,
yeah,
I think we'd get 350 on them, yeah. I really do.
All right. How many sacks, interceptions do we get? How much pressure we get on Winston?
Maybe one interception, maybe one or two sacks in the fourth quarter, not before. What do you think?
Yeah. All right, we got another question about Mason going pro from RC, and he says 30% chance of leaving.
I think with him getting invited to the Heisman, I think it's about 65% chance he's going to leave.
Well, I think a lot of it depends on what the NFL comes back and says too.
Yeah,
where, you know, if they come back and say fifth round draft pick, then he's going to say, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Next question comes from Ross Hat.
What do you think Cameron Artis Payne thinks about that?
I'm sure Cameron Artis Payne hopes he'll go, but yeah, that was a pretty nice run he had at the end of that game. I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next question comes from Ross Hatcher. He's asked a lot of good questions over the time, and he says, is it just me, or did the Bramlett Iron Bowl call sound a bit like Howard Dean's election rally speech?
My wife said the same thing, actually.
When he started screaming, rah, yeah. Rah!
And then we're going to go to the Iron Bowl, and then we're going to go to the SEC Championship, and then we're going to go to Pasadena and take back the National Championship. Yeah! There you go.
Yeah. All right.
Beautiful, beautiful thing, though.
Next question comes from John Rogers, who says, is Nick Marshall a stoic, a Terminator, or does he just lack an adrenal gland?
He's cool, man.
He's just cool.
He's a cool cat.
He really is. I think that's one of the real underrated things about Nick Marshall is, you know, you want your quarterback to be calm. You want your quarterback to be, you know, a cool customer in the pocket. He's not rattled. The pressure doesn't get to him. He makes good decisions. And Nick Marshall has that, you know, 10 out of 10.
I've got a word for it.
Okay.
It's a college word. Preternaturally calm.
Well, that's a $3 word right there.
$3.50 inflation. Preternaturally calm.
I like the stoic. The stoic Terminator. But he is amazingly calm. He comes out of the game. He's fine. You know, I mean, even the series where, you know, he got stripped and they picked it up and ran it in the end zone for a touchdown. He was like, oh, yeah, fine, we'll get it back. No big deal.
Who was one of the other guys on our network always says that he had, or maybe it's one of the solid verbal guys. One of them says that he has shark eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just sort of half asleep or half dead, but they're sizing you up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, by the way, I mentioned the solid verbal. I got to point out, I've been having this running little bicker fest with Ty for like weeks now, where I was saying, where he kept saying Missouri is the story of the year. And I'm like, well, we're going to settle it on the field. And he's like, oh yeah, right, right. And then it got to be, you know, Missouri and Auburn. And then he's like, well, I can't go back and apologize for every prediction I was wrong about. I'm like, that's fine. No, I'm not saying that. And so I'm like, we're going to settle it. You'll see. And then so I tweeted him yesterday or whenever and said, okay, it's settled now, right? So I'm waiting to hear back now from Ty, what you call it?
Hildenbrandt.
Hildenbrandt, yeah. And to concede that, yes, indeed. Well, because his argument was a valid one, though. He said that the reason he didn't think it should be Gus was simply because Auburn is supposed to win and Auburn has good players. And I said, well, remember, a lot of these 4- and 5-star players you think we have, we don't actually have anymore. I said, most of the people are gone.
No, but, I mean, they are a lot of good talent players in this team.
But, you know, Missouri has been great or very good for a long time. Last year was actually an aberration. So if you look at last year for us and say, you know, oh, that was an aberration, you look at Missouri and say, no, they're a 5-7 team, and then you look at this year, then, yeah, you'd say, wow, Missouri's the story because Auburn is supposed to be, you know, 11 and whatever, and Missouri is not supposed to be 11 or whatever, but Missouri had double-digit wins like 5 of the last 7 years in the Big 12.
I know, but the question was, can Missouri play in the SEC or not? Big 12.
Okay, well.
All right, so we've got a couple more questions.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Pat Ringer, who asks
today.
He says, is Gus a witch?
Well, I'm not sure what supernatural abilities or what genre of the sword and sorcery and horror fiction realm Gus comes out of. I thought he came out of the young wizard camp, right? The young adult, bespectacled young wizard at Hogwarts. But lo and behold, I think we're finding out he's actually, it's not Nick Saban that's Voldemort, you know, scaring the crap out of everybody. I think it's Gus. In fact, there was some, wasn't it?
Oh, bite your tongue.
Who was it that was saying Nick Saban probably needs to just go ahead and get out of the SEC now and go somewhere like Texas?
Go to Texas.
Where he can win because he's not going to win now or whatever. Somebody in actual position of Spencer Tillman? Yeah. Yeah, it was Spencer Tillman on Saturday. Did you hear that?
Yes.
I thought I was hallucinating auditorily in an auditorium.
All right. Our final question comes from Auburn Hula, who has changed his Twitter name to Trey for Heisman.
I like it.
And he says, thoughts after watching, how can anyone else win the Heisman? Am I wearing Auburn-colored glasses?
Well, yes, but he's going to be there, and I think that's good enough, considering he wasn't on anybody's radar until about 3 days ago, right? 2 days ago.
That's so, right. I think it's amazing that he made it as a finalist.
Yeah.
Considering that I think a lot of people in America knew he was a good player. He was going to be an All-SEC candidate after the last, you know, third of the season. But nobody was talking about him for the Heisman.
4 days ago, he was not going to be in New York.
That's right.
It's remarkable. And the problem is that Winston is the most prohibitive favorite in recent history. I mean, Cam would have been, except for there were all these dumbasses that, you know, refused to vote for him because of their moral perturbations or whatever. But I'm sure there's a better word that I just didn't think of. But anyway, Winston is a prohibitive favorite. Somebody says like a 1,500 to 1.
Yep.
And so, no, Trey's not going to win, but he certainly deserves every consideration and is an awesome, awesome player. And considering that only one Auburn running back in history has won the Heisman, it does make you kind of reevaluate the place that Trey Mason has in Auburn running back history, which is something I believe you are wanting to talk about in one of our upcoming shows. Am I correct?
Yes. A few weeks ago on this very podcast, we had a discussion about Trey Mason, and I said a few things about him. And so next week, we're going to reevaluate Trey Mason's place in Auburn history and his relative importance in that. And I'm going to eat some crow for the things I said about Trey Mason.
I believe you said something about his mama.
I did not. But I did say, you know, for example, that I would take Stephen Davis over him, which looks really stupid now. So So we'll. There's plenty of time. We're gonna have lots of time next week to talk about Trey Mason.
Yes, yes. I'll save my choice comments. All right.
All right. So let's move on to the Missouri game. You ready?
I think we did play Missouri recently in some sort of sport, didn't we?
I guess the first thing is that was a really high scoring, fun game to watch. I mean, it got a little crazy for a while. For a minute there, I thought we were headed towards like 2010 Arkansas level scoring crazy.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, the game that it made me think of there for a while was the Georgia game from 2010, where the commentators and everybody else was thinking as they were saying it, you know, this is a tennis match and whoever can't hold serve is going to just be in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing as with Georgia. In both cases, it was score, 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 and whoever tripped. And see, there was a stretch there where we were having problems, and I was thinking, man, if they're able to put the hammer down now, we're going to get in too deep of a hole. Because just like, you know, to some degree, like the old wishbone teams, we're not really built to come roaring back from deep in the hole. We're built to get a lead and then just hammer away at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they, with their passing game, had been able to pull away from us the way that we sort of eventually did on them, I don't know. I would have been very uneasy about our chances. But we never really got down like that. I mean, the worst we've gotten down, I guess, in a while was the second quarter against Alabama, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. So, I mean, yeah, 14 points to Alabama, which is too much for 99% of the teams in America. But
right, right.
The other thing is just the running game for Auburn went to another level. I mean, that was it was like we turned it in 1995 Nebraska all of a sudden. It was unbelievable.
That's right.
It was when have you ever seen a team, not just Auburn, but any team, run the ball against a good team the way we ran the ball in that game?
Right,
it was amazing.
And here's the thing about it. Teams in the past that have put up that kind of yardage or anything close to it had somebody like a bow. Well, there's nobody like Bo, but you know what I mean. They had a breakaway threat that popped one or two 80-yarders.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this in like fours and fives and sixes per carry, or maybe a little bit more. I mean, I know there were a few longer ones mixed in, but this was a very blue-collar 500 yards. This was not a flashy Barry Sanders, you know, Bo Jackson, 500 yards. This was a workmanlike 500 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't really stand out. It's just, it's like the dull thud of a hammer hitting you in the head over and over and over.
It has the same effect, though.
Yeah.
But again, Missouri's defense isn't bad. I mean, some people want to look back at this and go, well, Missouri wasn't that good. But Missouri was, you know, one of the better defenses in the SEC going into this game, and they were ranked pretty highly in the country against the run, and we just destroyed them. I mean, Missouri has a lot of players on defense who are going to play in the NFL, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing. I mean, the defensive ends on that team are absolutely going to play in the NFL, and there was nothing they could do.
Well, they were stumbling backwards at full speed with their center of gravity rapidly going from their hips to their head, as a very large man in blue and white was shoving them into the ground.
Well, and
it's kind of hard to be an All-American when that's happening over and over and over.
And that's the other part. Like, Trey Bass has got a lot of love, and he deserves it, but the Auburn offensive line has come a light years this season. J.B. Grimes has done an amazing job. And in the SEC championship game, the offensive line for Auburn dominated that game. I mean, Missouri probably has the best defensive line talent in the SEC. It's Auburn, Missouri, and South Carolina are the three teams with great defensive lines. And, you know, if Auburn had tried your favorite offense where the quarterback drops back and stands there stationary and looks around the field, we might have had real problems with their defense. But the kind of run the ball, run at them offense that Gus likes to employ,
yes,
our offensive line was like a road grader against them. And I need to say this. Greg Robinson had one of the best days that an Auburn offensive lineman maybe ever had in that game. You go back and watch the highlights or watch the game again. He's number 73. And he was blocking guys like 8 to 10 yards down the field, pushing them. He pushed guys completely out of the play. On one play where Mason scores, it's late in the game. We're on about the 15-yard line. We went to an unbalanced line thing where he was on the right-hand side next to Avery Young, and he comes straight up the middle and clears a huge hole for Mason. And even then, like when Marshall dropped back to pass and he was matched up against one of those big pass rushers, Michael Sam, one of those other guys, he would let them flow by him and throw him to the ground, and they never got anywhere near Marshall. He was amazing in this game.
I'm pretty sure there was one play where one of the Missouri defensive ends, I think that he blocked him all the way up into the stands where the guy's mother got his autograph.
It was kind of like the Michael Orr thing. I mean, it really was. He really, really was impressive. And the whole offensive line was. Prosh has been great the last couple of games, and the Georgia game, the Alabama game, this game. And he and the offensive line together just pounded on Missouri, and they didn't want anything to do with us late in that game. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anything they could do to stop Auburn. And you combine that with the fact that Gus's offense makes the defense unsure where the ball's going to be, so they run to the wrong spot half the time. It makes it very hard to stop.
And everybody in that stadium and watching pretty much knew that that was happening. And it was just like watching a slow death, like a slow murder, because they were fighting back. You know, the game was in doubt till the middle of the fourth quarter. But you just never got the sense that if Auburn would quit messing itself up, right? We tripped over our own feet a few times. And as we know, the single thing that will slow our offense down is to lose yards on first down.
That's right.
That's the one thing we have the hardest time getting over, because then they tend to go to the pass, and it takes away from our strength. It goes away from our strength. But, you know, what you're saying reminds me. I've said this before on here, I'm sure, and I'll say it again because it bears repeating over and over. One of the things I love, you know, I love the hurry-up tempo. But probably the single thing that I love the most about Gus's offense and what we do on offense, just at a visceral level, just at a subliminal level, the thing that I love the best about it is that it attacks the offense. There's not much read. I mean, I realize at the point of attack when you're running the read option or whatever, there's a read factor there, obviously. It's what it's called. But generally speaking, the orientation of the offense is not the step back and survey, though there is some of that too. The primary focus of our offense is take it to the other team and make them deal with it. And I love that, because I feel like that puts you stepping forward and them stepping back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot harder to go backwards when your offense is geared toward going forwards and not towards looking around.
That's true. It's not just like look around, find the empty spot on the field and put the ball there. It's like just we're coming and, you better have everybody exactly lined up right in the right hole. And even then, there was plays where Missouri defensed it exactly right. Mm-hmm. And like Marshall just made a guy miss one time. The guy was in the right position and he defended the play exactly right. And Marshall just faked him out, went right by him.
You know, I'm sorry.
Or Mason did the same thing and just the guys bounced right off him. They couldn't tackle it.
Oh yeah. I was sort of listening back and forth to the CBS audio and then to the Auburn network. I would have just had it on the Auburn network, but there's a big delay. Plus, my wife wanted to actually hear what she was seeing. She wasn't comfortable with trying to process, you know, and that's fine. But after a play was over, I would turn up the radio and hear Bramblett say it like a replay, because they're a few seconds behind. And one of them, either I forget if it was Stan White or if it was the CBS guys, but somebody was saying, that the play is called in the huddle or from the sideline, where they just guess what the defense is going to do, and sometimes they inadvertently run right into the defense. In other words, it's not as much read and go after the weakness as it is we just kind of guess where the weakness is going to be, and we do that regardless. And if that's true, and I don't know that's true, but if that's true, it backs up what you were just saying, which is that we run into their strength and they still bounce off of us and can't stop it.
No, I mean, you've seen this before, like on this, the last two games especially. Gus will just run the same play again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, like, there's no way you could beat Alabama running the same play again and again and again, but they did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they couldn't, Alabama couldn't stop. And part of it is because it's the same play, the blocking's the same, we line up the same way with the same players, but in every time you run the play, it's like a point guard with the basketball on the fast break, and you don't know which way he's going to pass it or if he's going to keep it. And that's what Marshall does. Every time he gets up to that, you know, the mesh where he's thinking about handing it to Mason, it's a real decision. He could hand it off, he could keep it. And if the defense goes one way, he gives it to Mason. If the defense goes the other way, he pulls it out. So it's not like in the old school offense where he called it, it's going to be a handoff no matter what. I mean, every time he's thinking about that, and the defense can't handle it at all.
You know, I feel like I understand football pretty well for a layperson. But I wish I understood it just a little bit better, because I would like to know what is the real difference between what our offense does and what Pat Dye's old triple option wishbone did. I mean, I mean, obviously the formations, right? And there's more of a passing threat here, obviously. But is it more what the offensive line is doing? Or, I mean, in other words, if you put this offense into our 1983 team, would they just, you know, click right along? Would they be doing things substantially different other than just the shapes of the formations and the shotgun and all that? What do you think?
I got to think about that one.
Yeah. I mean, because they're similar in a lot of ways, but they're also, you know, because you're using the fullback as an option, the quarterback's an option.
Some of it is just halfback. Football has really evolved into much more of a speed edge thing versus back then it was more straightforward power stuff.
I guess what I'd really like to know is, because I never really knew about it when I was a kid, how much offensive line funkiness was going on with those old wishbone teams? Because you and I know that Gus is doing things with the offensive linemen that is sophisticated.
Yeah. And the other thing that's great about it is that often, you know, they do these combination play things where it looks like the offensive line is doing one thing and Marshall's doing one thing and something else is going on with the receivers. And Marshall can keep it, he can hand up to Mason or he can throw it. The receivers are running like a screen pass kind of thing on the side, whether they get the ball or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the defense has to go out there and respect it. And so they're not inside looking at Mason because they're worried, because Marshall legitimately has the option to just pull it back and throw it to him.
Yeah, Gus does put a lot of things in that handicap the defense, that limits what the defense can do in their attacking. He's all about attacking, and he's about slowing the attack of the defense. That's really interesting.
All right, a little more stuff about Missouri. I mean, the other thing that was really impressive about that game was the lack of hangover that Auburn had. I mean, that's some amazing coaching and an amazing job by the players to go a week after the incredible high of that Chris Davis return at the end of the Alabama game and everybody run on the field, to get ready to play another top five team and come out focused from the first minute. I thought it was an amazing job.
Absolutely. I've got a few SEC championship game factoids I'm going to run through real fast.
All right.
This was the first SEC championship game that Auburn won in a season where we didn't go undefeated. So our combined record for those 3 years so far, now we still got one more game to play, our combined record for the 3 years we've won SEC championship games, 39-1. It's pretty amazing, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Auburn is one of only three teams out of the 14 SEC teams to have a winning record in SEC championship games. You know who the other two are?
No.
Florida and LSU.
Yeah, Florida, I should have guessed.
Alabama does not have a winning record. They are 4-4. Auburn and Florida are the only teams to win three SEC championship game appearances in a row. Nobody else has won more than two in a row. Auburn is the only SEC team that's currently on a 3-plus game win streak in the SEC championship game, because Florida lost to Alabama recently.
That's right.
Oh, this is interesting. Only two of the 22 SEC championship games featured teams where neither was ranked in the top five.
That's surprising.
Only two had teams, neither was in the top five. And one of them is 2000 because Auburn was there with, probably ranked like 15 with Rudy Johnson. And Florida was kind of a mediocre Florida, but they won the East. But the other one, though, is understandable. And that should be the only one because the other one is 1993 when we were undefeated and we're in the top five or should have been, but we were ineligible.
We beat both the participants.
Beat both the participants, yes. Every SEC championship game winner in the last 12 years was ranked in the top five except Georgia in 2005. They were number 13. A couple more.
But that was a big upset, though, them winning.
Yeah, they beat number 3 LSU.
Yeah, that was a big upset.
That was Les Miles' first year.
Yep.
That was the same year that we almost beat LSU, except for the field goal thing. Let's see. This is a fun one. What is the combined record in SEC championship games of Tennessee, Arkansas, and Georgia? If you add up all their wins and losses.
It's not good.
4-9. Tennessee, Arkansas, and Georgia, 4-9. And I think two of the wins are Tennessee and two are Georgia. And Arkansas, thanks for attending. They get an attendance prize. And lastly, in terms of attendance, speaking of attendance, in the last five SEC championship games, the highest attendance was 2010 and 2013. Who played in the 2010 and 2013 games?
I don't know.
I think that's somebody. The lowest attendance was at the two Alabama appearances and LSU.
Well, that brings up a good point. The crowd in the Georgia Dome was about 75% Auburn.
Yes.
And it was a great crowd on Saturday night. It made a big difference. It was very pro Auburn.
Yeah, I kept hearing that all day that there were way. In fact, somebody kept telling me, people kept saying there were more Alabama people there than Missouri people, which doesn't surprise me because Alabama fans basically just buy the tickets every year. They sell another kid, into slavery. Give up another.
All right.
Make their wife give up another kidney, and they show up. So, yeah, they were there.
The other thing in this game is it illustrated, something that we know already, which we're going to see again in the championship game. That is, if you give Gus Malzahn time to prepare, even a week, he's really dangerous. And he's such a good coach. I mean, he's just a good game coach, too. I mean, how about the onside kick? And in an offensive shootout like that to steal possession from the other team, It was well timed and well done. We didn't even pull any of that stuff out against Alabama. So you thought if we didn't use it against them, then
I know. I mean, Gus, we haven't used the onside kick since LSU, have we?
No.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was really interesting. We didn't do some. Oh, I did think of one more thing just now. This wasn't one I had written down, but I just realized Auburn has more SEC championships in the last 10 years than any other program, right? We've got three. Alabama, Florida, LSU have each got two, and Georgia's got one in the last 10 years. But here's the weird thing. Alabama, same coach. Florida, same coach. LSU, same coach. Georgia, one championship, one coach. Auburn has three SEC championships in the last 10 years, each under a different head coach.
Mm.
That's just weird, isn't it?
That's amazing.
Yeah. And each will have a Bear Bryant trophy when it's over.
All right. Any other thoughts about the championship game? How do you feel about Missouri as an opponent now?
I thought they were good. I mean, I think Missouri. I don't want to spill the beans too much on my thoughts on Florida State, but here I'm going to spoil the whole thing just by saying this. I think Missouri could beat Florida State.
Wow.
Does that tell you how I feel about Pasadena?
Okay, that tells us how you feel about Pasadena. Mm. Let's move on to talk about the BCS National Championship game.
John.
Yes.
For all of that to work out, right, we're going to Pasadena, right? Well, not literally we, right, anymore, but Auburn is going to play in the national championship game in Pasadena. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It all worked out. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That That cannot be, John. It's just madness. It's madness.
This is madness!
You kind of can guess what's coming, can't you?
Yes.
It's madness!
This is madness!
Madness. This is Sparta!
Okay, well, did you know that there is a clip on YouTube where Gerard Butler actually came out on the field before a Michigan State game and did the line,
Spartans!
I did not know that.
He did this line.
Spartans! What is your profession?
I mean, how cool is that?
It is cool. And listen, I got to be honest. I emailed some of my neighbors who are Michigan State fans and told them thank you.
Spartans!
Yeah. I wish I'd known some. I would have done the same.
There's a couple people in our neighborhood who I know from the PTA, and that I told them, you know, I thank you and I owe them a beer.
Yeah.
And I put on Twitter, I put the email, I put the physical mailing address of the Michigan State Athletic Department if you'd like to send a card or perhaps a fruit basket.
Or some roses, because they're going to the Rose Bowl too, you know.
That's right. And look, I mean, they didn't do it to help us.
No. Okay?
That's a program that hasn't been at the Rose Bowl since 1988.
George Perlis.
And so, I mean, and the coach said today, I was looking at something today where he said, you know, he's been there 7 or 8 years, and every day at the end of practice, they put everybody's hand in the middle, and they say,
Spartans!
Rose Bowl. Big to be a Big Ten champions every time, and they hadn't done there until that game. So I'm happy for them.
Well, I'm glad that they didn't do that and say BCS championship game at the Rose Bowl, because they left that for. I mean, what is interesting? They beat the number 2 team, the yep. undefeated team. They only have one loss.
Well, what I'm saying, we owe Notre Dame a big thank you. It'd be Michigan State. God. It gets. Florida State.
But why wasn't anybody saying that Michigan State ought to
Well, I think some people were, but the other part is I think they lost to Notre Dame and they hadn't looked that good. And until they beat Ohio State, they hadn't beaten anybody that good either.
So. Yeah, that's right. And they were number 10 while we were number 3. So
that's right.
I guess you can't really complain. If I were a Michigan State fan, I would be probably saying, well, dang, how come it's not us? We're 11-1 or 12-1 or whatever, but you know.
But at the same time, they're delighted to be in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, we're both getting to play in the same stadium, just on, you know, slightly different days and for slightly different trophies, but that's cool.
But, I mean, they win that conference, they beat their rivals, they beat Ohio State, they go to the Rose Bowl, they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, has Auburn ever played in that stadium?
No. No, I mean, this is what's so funny, is Alabama actually, like, embraces it to their bosom. You know, it's in their fight song that they played in it one time back before cars were invented. they rode their ponies out to Pasadena to play in that game. And so this is like a big in your face to Alabama from us. It's just perfect. We're defiling. We're like the American soldiers walking into Saudi Arabia in the Gulf War and defiling Mecca. This is one of their precious little historical meccas, and here we are stomping all around in it. I love it. I love it.
Do you think that the 2010 experience matters in terms of the coaching staff for Auburn in this game?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I clearly whatever they did in 2000 worked pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Gus now has a chance to kind of figure out what maybe was less effective versus more effective and do more. I mean, I heard his press conference where he basically was saying, I didn't hear all of it, but he was saying something to the effect of that this is different from any other game because of the long layoff and because of the spotlight and the media and everything. And so you have to really kind of manage your time, the players, I'm sure the energy level, you know, you have to kind of, you almost are like a conductor.
Yeah,
you have to kind of keep things low key. You don't want everybody to fall asleep sometime around, you know, December 20th. Everybody.
Yeah, but you can't peak around December 20th either.
Yeah, right. It's a tough thing. It's got to be a tough thing.
All right, what you've already kind of tipped your hand with your Missouri comment, but we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Florida State. We have two full podcasts before the game, so we have plenty of time to talk about Florida State.
Including we'll do a little historical retrospective on the Auburn-Florida State series from the 80s through 1990, because I think John and I were certainly at more than one of them.
If not all of them.
Yeah, and watched them or whatever. So I remember them very clearly, every one of them pretty much. So I've got a lot of walks down memory lane with the Seminoles.
One thing that's interesting, I think you should think about this right away, is that, you know, Florida State other than Jimbo Fisher, has almost an entirely new coaching staff. It wasn't just Damian Craig that left last year. It was a lot of people.
Which nobody has mentioned but us.
Now, they lost a ton of coaches and turned over the staff. Now, it's kind of worked in a way for them this year. I mean, their offense and defense have both been excellent. But their defensive coordinator is this Jeremy Pruitt guy who was the secondary coach at Alabama last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you got a first-year defensive coordinator who is a Nick Saban, you know, disciple, basically.
Oh, Lord.
Coaching Florida State's defense. So they run a lot of – it's very similar to what Alabama does, a lot of the same stuff, and you know they're probably going to share information or whatever with Alabama. But the other side is, you know, we just played against the Alabama version of this defense, and they were well prepared for Gus's offense, and you saw how that worked out.
Yeah.
And against, I would say, you know, this guy, he may be the new genius of defensive football, but, you know, Nick Saban and Kirby Smart together are pretty darn good as defensive coaches, and there wasn't a lot they could do during that game. So,
well, and nobody has – I've heard people mentioning that, you know, Jimbo Fisher was on the staff under Terry Bowden. That's true. He was the quarterback coach for Damian Craig and who was right before Craig? Patrick Nix. Maybe Ben Leard. I don't know. He may have been gone by then. I'm not sure. I think he left by then. I'm not sure. But anyway, but Damian Craig, yeah, Damian Craig just left Tallahassee to come to Auburn before this season. And I haven't heard anybody in the media talking about how, you know, one of Auburn's greatest quarterbacks who recruited Winston and probably half the other good players on that team,
mm-hmm,
is Auburn's assistant or offensive coordinator,
wide receiver coach,
and he's co-offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach. Yeah,
yep.
And nobody's really mentioned that. And I was saying it's funny because, you know, in retrospect, Gus could have offered him this job by saying, you know, look, Damian, either way, you're going to play in the national championship game. I'm just going to let you be on the winning side.
Well, I'm not quite as confident about the game as you are, but we got plenty of time to talk about it. So.
Right. But it is going to be kind of cool, not only – I mean, that's the thing I hate the most, right, about not going, is it's going to be in the Rose Bowl. And I would have loved – because I can't imagine Auburn is going to be in the Rose Bowl again anytime soon. You've got to, A, get to the national championship game, which is hard enough, as every Auburn fan knows for us, apparently. And then B, you got to hit the lottery that it's that year, you know. Now, we really hit the lottery in terms of Arizona for our purposes, but everybody else told me they had a horrible time and it was the worst of the four BCS. I thought it was great. I had a great time. But, yeah, you know, so it'll be neat to have it in Pasadena. People I know are going to fly into Vegas and then stay there for a couple of days and then drive. You know, because if you watch any Hollywood movie or TV show, it's about 20 minutes by short drive over to L.A. from Vegas and back. You know, it's actually about 4 or 5 hours.
It's not 20 minutes.
No, but they always go, let's go to Vegas. And they jump in the car and, like, you know, 5 minutes later, hey, Vegas. But no, it's actually about 5 hours through the desert. But they just fast forward through that. But that's a neat idea. And I wish I'd thought of it in 2010.
All right. I still can't believe it.
I
can't believe we're at the national championship game.
I feel like we've played small ball tonight, and I feel like we haven't given the grand picture justice. I mean, I know that we're going to talk about the national championship game more in the next couple of weeks, and that's great. But I still am just wrestling with it. It's just too much to process. I mean, most teams would be grateful to have the Georgia game in a season, right? We followed that up with the game of the century, basically. Okay. And you think, well, that's it. Auburn's used up all of its karma and luck for 1,000 years, you know. Well, no. Then we turn around and not only do we earn a victory in the championship game, but all the, you know, it's like fate and destiny lost their contact lenses and thought we were Alabama.
Well, but maybe it was our time. I mean, that's the other thing.
Well, that's the truth.
I mean,
Lord knows that's the truth.
I know that, but I mean, there's been lots of other years when it should have been our time and it just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. 2004, most especially, but and there was plenty of other years. But and you see these other SEC teams when things break their way and they get their thing, and you know, LSU wins the stupid national championship with two losses,
worst thing,
including a loss to Kentucky. Okay, and
that should be an SEC founding rule. If you lose to Kentucky, regardless of your record, you are ineligible to play for a championship.
Boom. You're out.
You're done.
Yeah, now, if I'm on the committee, I'd make the playoff committee. I'd make that rule, but
the Lexington rule.
the Lexington rule. Yeah. So. And then Alabama getting to win without winning the conference or even winning their division, I think is ridiculous. So,
yeah.
You know, those kind of thing, breaks have gone their way, or teams get back in it with one loss before, but not, you know, the year we go undefeated, we don't get in it. So, you know, but this year, things just went our way.
Well, that's what I was saying.
It really did.
That's the argument that I was making before the game Saturday was, you know, 2004, the country is telling us undefeated doesn't matter. You know, that's not what it's about. Too bad. You don't get to play. And in 2013, they were telling us, oh, no, I'm sorry. You have to be undefeated or you can't play. I'm like, just, you know, make up your mind, because we've been told two completely different things based on what our situation was. And it was really making me angry, aggravated and angry. And just my elation when that Michigan State running back, I should know his name and have it tattooed on my arm.
It's Langford.
Langford. When he broke through and took off. Because you know how that game went.
Oh, yeah.
17 to nothing.
Ohio State came back and tied it up. Believe me.
And then scored 7 more. They scored 24 unanswered points.
I was chewing my fingernails then.
So, yeah. Which we'll talk more later. But, yeah, I have miracle fatigue. We'll see how the next week or so affects me recovering. I hadn't even finished watching the Iron Bowl over again. Mm-hmm. Now I got to watch the dang Missouri game over again, too. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's just so much in such a short time. I need like a whole season to process all this.
Well, you got a couple weeks to recover and process it before we have to play another meaningful game.
Yeah, so. All right. Is there anything else left on our agenda?
No.
I guess I'll just tell them to get our book.
That's right. If you need a Christmas gift for the favorite Auburn fan on your list, you know, head out to Amazon or to your local bookstores, the Auburn University Bookstore, J&M, and pick up Season of Our Dream or Decades of Dominance.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoy those. And on Amazon, they're available in paperback or Kindle. So in case you know somebody that's a big Kindle reader.
And in paperback, Decades of Dominance is like 20% off on Amazon right now. We have no control, and the publisher has no control of that. What happens is when books sell better, Amazon starts marking them lower. So the better a book sells, the cheaper it becomes. It's a weird thing. And Decades has been selling pretty well the last couple of weeks for various reasons. And so if you go right now into Amazon and look for Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era, you can just put in Decades of Dominance, Plexico, Ringer, whatever. It's like 20% off on there right now. And, of course, you know, Amazon has free shipping over $25 and all that. So get you some Christmas presents and stick that one in there. It's Auburn History, Auburn Top 10 List. It's one of those books, John, that I think is just fun to just pick up and open to any page and enjoy a top 10 list or some analysis or humor or something like that. So not to blow our own horn or anything, but if we don't, you know, who will, right? We have to.
And the other thing I want to say is something I meant to say at the end of last week's podcast, where we're talking about the Alabama game, is, years from now, when I'm having a bad day and things aren't going well, I'm gonna sit down and I'm gonna watch the those clips, the end of the Georgia game and then the Alabama game, and I'm gonna listen to Rod Bramlett's call and I'm gonna smile. And I'm always gonna carry that around with me for the rest of my life.
Yep. Yeah, the 2010 AUHD video, I have it on my iPad, my phone, everything. And whenever I just feel like it at lunch or something, I just turn that thing on and let it go. And I'm looking forward to the 2013 version.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I reckon at this point our time is up, and we thank you for yours. We'll be back in a week or so to talk about Florida State and off to Pasadena. So, John, War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
The Missouri Boat Ride.
Spartans! This is madness!